Next case of the morning. Which is Zhang against Gonzalez. Mr. Masucci?
Yes. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I am Thomas Masucci, representing Mr. Zhang in this petition for review. At the outset, I would just like to indicate that we certainly concede that the record does not show any past persecution of Mr. Zhang, and therefore there is no presumption of future persecution should he be forced to return to China. The issue, therefore, is whether or not Mr. Zhang has a well-founded fear of future persecution.
But, of course, the more precise issue is what exactly is the social group or focus group? I mean, you're not saying, you know, it's religion, for example. The statute has a limited list of categories, and I'm having a lot of trouble figuring out how we focus on any group for Mr. Zhang.
Right, Your Honor. I would not have crafted his original claim or his administrative brief solely or primarily in terms of social group. However, it seems to me that he is a part of a group, an indeterminately large group in China of those citizens who resist attempts by the Chinese government and those individuals working in the name of the Chinese government to extort money and other benefits from its citizens illegally.
Now, do you think that if someone from Chicago happened to be in China and alleged that they'd been shaken down by the Chicago police, that they should get political asylum in China?
No, Your Honor. However,
I mean, unfortunately, it's been known to happen here. I hope less and less, but
right.
As you know, there's a certain history in Chicago.
Well, in the case of China, in this instant case, it's not just a question of being shaken down. It's a question of being shaken down, there being some resistance to that shakedown, and then there being the very real threat of imprisonment, and that happens in China. It does not happen in the United States, so I think that's certainly a distinction. Interestingly, in the respondent's brief, respondent does raise the issue of political opinion, and we sort of conceded political opinion as not being exhausted in our brief. However, given the fact that the respondent has raised it, I would like to at least address that very, very quickly. It's our position, both with regard to political opinion and a particular social group, that the immigration judge here had a duty under board precedent case matter of SMJ to develop the evidence a little better than it was developed. This individual hearing lasted a total of 9 pages of transcript. The INS.
If you had no constraints whatsoever based on the record, which of course
right.
is a counterfactual, but if you had no constraints, what would your, in a nutshell, what would your political opinion argument be?
The political opinion argument would be that it would be essentially an imputed political opinion, and the imputed political opinion would be that Mr. Zhang is someone who believed that he should not be forced to succumb to the shakedown efforts, and that the Chinese government and the police in this case imputed to him the belief that, you know, he was just one of these ne'er-do-well people not willing to go along with their shakedowns.
And how do you get around this Marquez case, where the language of our court has said that not every victim of corruption can qualify for political asylum, that it's reserved for individuals who have engaged in political agitation against state corruption? And here, your client has never publicly spoken against the government, spoken against the corruption, sought to make any changes in the system. I mean, he makes a general allegation. How do you get around that case?
Well, Your Honor, it would be certainly an easier case for us if Mr. Zhang had been that more visible, more focused and vocal person. However, unfortunately for him, he was an elementary school graduate. He was a construction worker, not the most articulate person in the world, probably. And the fact that it wasn't just a question of corruption, though. It was a question of resistance to that corruption. And the resistance was on a very, very small scale and a very, very individualized scale, but it nonetheless was resistance. And I would argue that it's not the shakedown that got Mr. Zhang into trouble. It's his resistance to the shakedown, and that resistance to the shakedown, even though it's not terribly dramatic or he was not terribly public or vocal about it, that is what really puts him in harm's way. I'd also just like to comment very briefly about a couple of the remarks made in the respondent's brief about the about this question of political opinion. The respondent argues that the officials who were levying the tax had no interest in Mr. Zhang's political opinion. Well, that, I think, really misses the point. The officials who were interested in arresting Mr. Zhang were very interested in his political opinion, and they were interested in him at that point because of his resistance. Certainly, courts have and the board has held that that political opinion does not have to be sophisticated. It does not have to be completely specific. It just has to be there, or it has to be imputed. And in this case, his statement made on page 94 of the record, because I believe strongly that money is what I desire and I earn. It's obviously not a statement of a great political thinker, but that to me is kind of the substantive core of what he believes, and it's that belief that really got him into trouble with the Chinese government.
But, I don't see, just quickly, how we could possibly decide this case without knowing, in fact, whether the Chinese government was entitled to collect these taxes against him or not. There's obviously some dispute about whether he was conducting the construction properly.
Right.
And that's a very difficult task for a U.S. court, which may lead to things like the Marquez statement. It would really require us to become experts in the individual tax laws of every
right
country in the world.
No, I agree, Your Honor. And again, I would go back to one of my first points, that the this is a case where the petitioner was found to be credible. However, there was not a sufficient development of the record. I mean, he implied that it was done for protection purposes, but granted, that's not enough by itself for you to make a decision in this case on.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Palmer.
May it please the court. My name is Joe Palmer.
If you're feeling ambitious, Mr. Palmer, you could actually raise the podium too. Most lawyers are reluctant to. There's a button down there on the side, and if you press it, it will either go up or down, and then it will go the other way. Now press it again; it will go up. There you go.
Thank you.
Certainly.
The immigration judge in this case provided at least three separate grounds supporting his denial of the petitioner's asylum claim. And the petitioner has challenged only one of these grounds, that is the particular social group issue. But it's important to point out, as I think the panel understands from his questions to petitioner's counsel, that the immigration judge also, in addition to the finding that petitioner's testimony failed to establish his membership in a particular social group, he also failed to establish that his persecution was on account of his membership in that group. That is, petitioner was required to show that his persecutors were motivated by his membership in a particular social group and not merely motivated by the desire to obtain his money. And the immigration judge's finding that there was not sufficient evidence to demonstrate that motivation is unassailable and is alone a sufficient basis to affirm the immigration judge's decision. Now, on the question of membership in a social group, it's important to point out that the immigration judge cited and quoted the correct language defining, setting forth the definition of a particular social group. And that language is that the defining characteristic of a particular social group must be a characteristic that is immutable, or if it is something that the petitioner has the power to change, then it must be something that is so fundamental to his individual conscience or identity that he may not be required to change it. Now, in this case, the petitioner has identified the particular social group as people who refuse to pay illegal taxes. And I think we can all agree that that is not an immutable characteristic, that the petitioner could always decide to pay up, and in that case, he would no longer be in the particular social group.
But, you know, that argument runs the risk of going too far, because if he says, I'm an opponent of illegal taxes, other illegal government actions too, things that violate basic human rights, things that violate all sorts of norms that we recognize in the international community, are also things that a citizen might oppose. And we don't usually say, you know, well, you could change your religion. Of course, people can change their religion. It's just we don't force them to do that. Or they can oppose abusive and illegal acts on the part of their government. And sometimes if they're singled out for persecution, that's severe enough, then, again, we recognize that. I mean, I guess the question I have is whether you think that corruption itself, opposing corruption, can never alone be grounds for political asylum, or whether you can envision some circumstances where it would be.
No, Your Honor, we do not contend that opposition to corruption can never be grounds for an asylum. And in fact, the Marquez case that was quoted earlier says that opposition to corruption can be persecution of someone who is sort of has presented evidence that he's kind of a political gadfly on the question of corruption, or someone who is an activist and is persecuted because of that opinion.
So that's a political opinion ground.
That's political opinion.
Now, social group.
Membership in a social group, the characteristic doesn't have to be immutable if the petitioner is able to show that his refusal to pay the taxes comes so deeply and profoundly from his own identity and conscience that it would violate his identity and conscience to force him to change.
Suppose he thought that the taxes he was paying were going straight to the production of nerve gas or some weapon of mass destruction. Any difference?
Sure. I think if there were evidence that the petitioner's very identity or conscience would be violated by making the payment, then I think in that case he may be able to set forth a claim. I don't hesitate to say that there isn't such evidence on this record, and on the record that we have, the petitioner's testimony was that he wanted to keep his money. Now there's nothing wrong with that. That's an understandable motivation, but it's not the kind of deep, fundamental, principled sort of.
Indeed, our president has frequently said that he thinks most people want to keep their money. Has he not, in his tax policies?
He has. We're fully conceded this is not only a justifiable but an almost universal motive, but there's a sense in which that cuts the other way.
Right.
In any event, given the standard of review in this case, which is that not only does the evidence has to actually compel a finding in the other direction. And the quantity of evidence in this case is insufficient under that standard of review.
What does the record show the basis for the claim of illegality, that these taxes were illegal?
That is based on the petitioner's testimony. The record reflects that the officials came to his construction site and claimed that he was required to pay a fee. Now, what the explanation of the fee changes from his asylum application to his testimony. In the asylum application, it's described as sort of a fine for substandard building materials. And in later, he describes it as a society security protection fee. In both instances, the petitioner has testified that he wasn't required to pay that fee and that his it was unjustified and illegal. And there's no, you know, I would have to concede that there isn't any direct evidence going the other way. In other words, there's no affirmative evidence in the record that, in fact, the officials were right or that he had been using substandard building materials.
Okay.
The court has no further questions, though.
All right. Thank you very much. I think you had a little, he has a little bit of time, doesn't he? You have 2 minutes.
I'd like just to say that respondents' counsel, I think, did a very good job of articulating the sort of the existential piece of the particular social group definition, and I would just reiterate that the paucity of the record as it was developed by the IJ. It really makes it impossible to determine one way or another whether or not that's where Mr. Zhang was at, and you know, in that light, I think we would hope that Mr. Zhang would be given an opportunity to develop the record more fully.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.